Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 15th day of February. Anno Domini 2025, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news.
You know what else is good about today?
What is else so good about today?
Half-price Valentine's candy.
Exactly. Half-price candy day. Perfect day. All right, Microsoft's February 2025 patch Tuesday, which included security updates for 55 flaws, including 4 zero-day vulnerabilities, with 2 being actively exploited in attacks, and a partridge in a pear tree.
At least that was down from 159 last month.
Exactly. It also fixes 3 critical vulnerabilities, all remote code execution vulnerabilities. The vulnerabilities include elevation of privilege, security feature bypass, remote code execution, information disclosure, denial of service, and spoofing. Oh, and the above numbers do not include a critical Microsoft Dynamics 365 sales elevation of privileges flaw, and 10 Microsoft Edge vulnerabilities, all of which were fixed on February 6th.
So long a vulnerability, you ran out of breath.
I ran out of breath. The 0 days are, of course, the most concerning. These include Windows Storage Elevation of Privilege Vulnerability, a Windows Ancillary Function Driver for WinSOC Elevation of Privilege Vulnerability, and a Microsoft Surface Security Feature Bypass Vulnerability, and an NTLM Hash Disclosure Spoofing Vulnerability.
Why is anyone still using NTLM?
Because they can't, because it's cheap. It's
30
there.
Years old.
It's already there.
The NT LAN Manager.
I know. Lest you think Microsoft is alone in this, there have also been updates for Adobe, AMD, Apple, Cisco, Google, Ivanti, Fortinet, Netgear, and SAP. Guaranteed you're using at least one product from a company in that list. So check every one of your devices for updates, not just your computer, but also your printer, your router, your phone, your tablet, your smart speaker, your television, any device you own that connects to the internet. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, are you up to date on all your devices? And your choices are, absolutely, doing it now, I'll get to it, going commando, and nah, too lazy. So far we've got 22 votes, and absolutely is first, which I believe means people are either lying or deluding themselves. I'll get to it as second, which is good, and at least the honesty of not too lazy. So, and you can give us a call, and you should do it early in the show this week, by the way. 585-966-JAZZ, it's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. You're right, Steve, NTLM is 30 years old, and Microsoft still uses it. In fact, the underlying code of every version of Windows, including 11, is NT. The yes. NT kernel is still the heart of Windows.
Yep.
And has been for 30 years. It's. I mean, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, I guess. But it's broke.
But it has been replaced by much better protocols.
Well, exactly. NTLM. The NT LAN manager has been, there are many better protocols than it around, and Microsoft should start using them. Now, there's nothing you can do about that, of course. That's baked into Windows. It is what it is. But, so we're not saying you need to be doing something because you can't. But Microsoft needs to be doing something because it can.
And companies that are still relying on 30-year-old software to run their business should have upgraded 25 years ago. But it's a it can be a huge deal, meaning right. upgrade all your PCs, upgrade your software. The guy that wrote that database is probably gone, and no one else knows how it works.
Possibly for real gone.
Yeah, and so you got to figure out how you're going to change everything when you don't know how to export your data from the old one. But I had a customer like that. Someone had written an access database for customer record management, 30 years ago, and they were trying to get the data out of it, and cut and paste was the only option.
Oh, my. Okay. So
tedious.
They hired an intern to... they hired an intern to retype everything until I told them, cut and paste.
Yeah, right. There's just no easy way to get around most of that stuff. When I talk to people all the time, and they say, well, I would like to move to Linux, except that I run this one program that only runs under Windows, and it runs my business.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, you need to talk to the people who own that software, who wrote that software.
If they're still around.
Mm-hmm. You need to be sure they are still around. They're still updating that software, and they have a migration plan, because you can't nobody can promise that the next version of Windows will accept that program. I know people who are still running Windows 7 because mm-hmm. they have a program that only runs under Windows 7.
It's got a key fob or something, dongle.
And the people who wrote that code died 20 years ago.
Yep.
Well, you need to hire somebody to rewrite other code. I'm sorry, but that's just, you can't, it's unsustainable.
And if your program hasn't had an update in a few months, it's probably vulnerable to something.
Right. Well, I was talking to a guy this week. I know we got to get to the phones, but I was talking to a guy this week. My Linux, I tried Linux because you told me to, and it updates every day. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hello?
Every time they don't wait a month to patch your machine. If they find a problem, they fix the problem. And yes, there are, 16,000 programs underlying Linux, just like there are under Windows and everything else. And so they're going to find little issues. Rather than letting them accumulate and become big issues, they fix them immediately and you get the patch. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to get patches in Linux, particularly since I rarely have to reboot my machine.
Yeah, and if you don't want to know about all the patches, you can turn off notification.
That's a bad idea.
True,
it's a horribly
but
bad
for home
idea.
For yeah. home users, I don't care. It got updated. I'm glad it got updated. Thank you, but you don't need to bother telling me.
If you don't
get updated, tell me.
Yeah, right.
And if folks are really listening to this show, week after week, we sit there and say, it's Patch Tuesday, and all the stuff that's been going on for not weeks, months, sometimes a couple of years that we've heard Microsoft, they finally got around to patching this. They've known about it for 2 years.
Microsoft only patches the operating system unless it's something truly egregious like it was last week.
Yeah.
They only patch the operating system once a month.
If we're lucky.
That means if I write a virus the day after Patch Tuesday,
you're golden.
I've got a month to play around in the internet.
And still find it.
Right.
The bad guys do. There's Patch Tuesday and Exploit Thursday.
Yep.
So by Thursday, the bad guys have figured out what the patches fix and write an exploit for it, because they know millions of people will never upgrade.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or they've found a new exploit that won't be patched for a month.
Yep.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm a pretty heavy distro hopper. Right now I'm playing with Makula Linux because it has a lot of AI integration.
Which version is that?
Makulu, Makulu. It's got very, very high AI integration. It'll write code, it'll draw images, et cetera, et cetera. And they use the APT package system. And I know you guys have talked about, don't use different package systems from BASIC. It'll mess up your system. Recently, they added a thing. I think it's called BAUH. as a universal package managing system. It'll do flat packs, it'll do snaps, it'll do apps. And I'm just wondering if you've ever heard of it and if you think I should use it or just stick to the APT system.
I have not heard of it.
I'm reading about it on itsfoss.com.
Yep. If they've added it as a legitimate part of the distro, an official part of the distro, then feel free to use it. I mean, clearly, they think it's great.
Okay, but you haven't heard of it.
I have not, but if it's new and...
It used to be called F-Pac-Man.
Yeah.
According to the GitHub repository.
Oh, no, that one I've heard of. And that one is that one is one of the ones that yes, handles everything, and it seems to be fine.
Ah, okay. Well, if you want to throw an AI package in there, try Mercurial Linux. It's got very heavy AI integration.
All right, thank you.
Nice.
Thanks.
Yep. Mercurial Linux.
Apparently, Makulu is a mountain range in Nepal.
Very nice. I will take a look at it. One of the joys of Linux, of course, is that there are hundreds, and also one of the problems with Linux, is that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of distributions of Linux.
Yep.
Every time somebody wants to do something new or cool, they just create a new version of Linux and to do it in. And it looks like, yeah, Makulu Linux is AI, heavily AI integrated.
But that's also the beauty of it, is that you can put it on a flash drive, boot to that flash drive, and test drive it. You don't have to trash your whole machine. You know, you can, if you're using a certain flavor of Linux, you can have it on there. But then when your machine boots up, you can also select boot off a flash drive and try different flavors.
Yep. Now, again, I always try to remember to remind people, when you run Linux off a flash drive, it's going to be very, very slow.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Linux. That's the speed of the transfer of data from the flash drive.
Yeah, it's unpacking it from a thumb drive. You know, right. I mean, get real. You know, it's not your big box that's sitting there. It's down to a little thing that's... You know, no bigger than or wider than a steak knife.
And for an interesting technological reason, a thumb drive that uses NAND flash is significantly slower than an SSD that uses NAND flash.
Right.
Just a slight issue.
But
there.
But some of those USB versus the PCI.
Well, but also it's a slightly different version of NAND.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cheaper.
What?
It can be cheaper.
It's a lot cheaper and a lot slower because of that. It's a different chemical mix a little bit, and it just doesn't...
Oh, and that's why they're sold so cheaply,
and
too.
That's why they're so cheap. But, yeah, I still have my 4-terabyte M.2 to put into my new computer. I was going to... I bought my new computer, and then we had some health things we had to deal with the first week. Well, I waited a couple of weeks because I knew I just had life.
Yeah, you had things going on.
I had life. But then we had some health issues. Then last week we bought my wife a new car, and now this week there'll be health things, and then maybe next week.
Life tends to get in the way, is it? You know, even though you're retired, it just happens that way.
Well, this is the conspiracy that all your devices get together at night and say who's going to die next. Mm-hmm. Your old computer died. The car died. This
conspiracy
died. That died.
Conspiracy theory. Yeah.
Yep.
And if they really hate you, they all die at once.
I don't need to hear about
Find
that.
Find some wood to knock on.
For people who've been paying attention to what I do, and I don't know why you are, before the end of the year, I was worried about the tariffs, so I bought a new computer, and I still haven't had time to put it together. It's sitting there mocking me. Every day it sits right next to my desk mocking me.
Yeah, but it's better to to put it off and be able to do it right when you can focus on it.
Exactly.
Than trying to do it half-ass, and pardon my French, but, you know, that's when it can cause more frustration because you're not taking the proper time to focus on what you're doing, and it just takes you twice as long.
We tell that to a lot of our customers. Replace your computer before it dies.
Yep.
Because when it dies, it's going to be a catastrophe, and you're going to be rushed, and you may not make the right decision, and and my business depends on it. Well, then you should kind of have a backup computer anyway.
Right, exactly. And one of the things that I did was I bought a KVM switch, keyboard, video, mouse, so I can hook up two computers
to one mouse,
to my keyboard, my video, and my mouse, so that I can switch back and forth. So I can
they are so handy.
I can take my time setting up the new machine, make it look exactly like the old one, move stuff over at my leisure. You know, I've got their gigabit Ethernet cards in both machines, and I have a gigabit switch. So data should move from one machine to the other at something close to gigabit. Now, you know, there will be slowdowns because the even the super fast M.2 SSDs I've got have to stop every once in a while to organize what they've got. So it won't be quite gigabit moving, but I'm looking forward to doing that and playing with it. But as both of these guys said, I bought it while my old machine. My old machine is eight years old. And it I was thinking about it anyway, right? So and I bought very high-end 8 years ago because I could afford it. And so it's lasted me this long.
Yeah, that's the other reason to buy a little higher-end because it lasts a lot longer.
Right.
Yep.
So it's lasted me this long, and it still isn't dead, but it's 8 years old.
I'm not dead yet.
And with the tariffs coming in and what we expect over the next 4 years, I don't think it's going to last 12 years.
It looks like the price of your computer has doubled.
Yeah. Yeah, see?
Even with the 49% off sale.
Right.
So it doubled to $3,000, and now it's $1,500 at 49% off.
Yep, yep.
Well, that's why, what was it? I bet you it's a good month and a half ago. You know, worried about the same thing, you know, ordering parts and all that. I wound up, because I use terabyte hard drives.
Yep.
The SSDs. SAD. And I thought, okay, I need one right now. I'm going to get three. Just in case something else happens. And I'm glad I did because I noticed on my wife's computer, because of the pictures she takes so many, I wound up ordering her another hard drive because her current terabyte hard drive is three quarters full and she's wondering why it's running slow.
The woman's got a sickness, I'm telling you right now.
Yeah. Well, she does all this stuff for Find a Grave.
And, no, I understand
know,
that.
God
I,
love her, but, you know, once you do the pictures, dump them. But she's like, well, just the case. And so that's why I grabbed another SATA hard drive, and I'm hooking that up so she's got another terabyte stuff she can just have off that it's not on the main drive to slow stuff down.
Just a reminder of one of our callers who had a memory card for their camera die, and they sent it off for recovery, and the shipping company lost it for 6 months before it could even be recovered.
Well, the one thing I have her do when she comes home taking the pictures and all that, because she'll take it at a whack, you know, 300-400 pictures sitting there going along with the graves headstones. But I have her copy it to her main computer, and then I got two other drives up in the clouds. One of them is Raspberry Pi, and then the other's off on the cloud. So she's copying it to two other places. Because all it took was that one time that Microsoft did the update and lost her, what was it, close to, I think it was 4,000 photos. Because it didn't put them all back.
Yep.
She now doesn't complain at all about, all right, copy it here, and now take that and copy it there and there. She knows she's got it backed up all the way around, so no qualms there.
Do you guys have Amazon Prime?
Yep. That's where the other place goes.
Back it up.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know yet,
it's free.
If you have Amazon Prime, you have free unlimited photo storage. Not document storage or any other kind of storage, but free photo storage.
Yeah, that's where all her, that's her cloud.
I am taking full advantage of that myself, and what? Clearly your wife is way ahead of me.
Oh, dude, the number, I don't even want to guess, because she's doing all, you know, the original plus any of the cropping and everything else. It's all getting stored up there, because, you know, just to have it, you know, why not? She goes, I don't have to worry about, nope. Just shove everything up there that you want to back up for, you know, even though you modify it two or three different times. I don't care.
And Amazon clearly doesn't care. You're paying for it.
Yeah.
So,
photos are free, but video counts towards your storage.
Right.
But they give you 15 gigs free.
Hold on, Al.
Right.
Which is high for the free storage tiers.
Right.
It's low for, you know, my photo library is like 500 or 600 gigs.
Well, but if you have Amazon Prime, you could put it all up there.
Yeah.
As long as photos,
And the sneaky thing is, most still cameras and smartphones will take video. And so that ends up in your photo library, even though it's a video. So I have to make sure I unselect that from all my Amazon upload. And apparently I've missed on 368 videos, because they're up there, out of my 93,000 photos.
Yeah, get them down and you'll gain back more storage.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Al from Rochester, New York. What's up, Al?
Morning, guys. Aren't you glad that terabytes are so cheap nowadays?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, believe me.
Love it.
I remember paying $2,000 for my first hard drive, which was 100 megabytes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
My 30 years ago.
My first exposure to a hard drive was a 5-meg Apple drive.
Yep.
For $4,000.
I was about to say, yeah.
And we were dying to play with it because it was the customer's.
Yeah.
But we have to test it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, back in those days, you had to do a manual format. The low-level format. Today, you just do an erase, but it's already low-level formatted. And it would take hours to do, you know, a few megs.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, just your chatter about both photos and losing things and updating and whatever, I just want to say I'm in the day three of a upgrade to Windows 11 that has not gone well. And I just want to repeat what you've always said, everybody. Before you go down that path to Windows 11, back up everything and then do it again, because when it goes wrong, it goes horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And you don't know when it's going to happen, so you should have backups, multiple backups all the time.
Yeah, I'm purposely about to go back to a 4-year-old backup, because somewhere in the depths of Windows, something's gone terribly wrong. In fact, I should ask you a question. Here's one. So I run Reflect backup software, and I have get a boot menu when I start up. Do I run Windows or do I want to run Reflect? Currently, it comes up and says, do you want to run Windows 10, Windows 11, or Reflect?
Nice.
And if I choose either Windows 10 or Windows 11, I get the same thing, Windows 10. Is that information stored in the first 1 meg hidden partition on the hard drive?
Okay. Do you have both Windows 10 and Windows 11 on your machine?
I can't find the 11. It said it installed it, but I can't find it, and I just always get Windows 10 no matter what I do.
Yeah, but Reflect found it.
No. It's just in the boot menu. Reflect is still an option for going into recovery.
Oh, I see what you're saying. All right, okay. So, yeah, it's in the boot menu, but when you hit it, you get Windows 10. Yes, something has gone horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm. Sideways, big time.
So it got through the Windows 11 install, but never put that into the boot manager.
No, it's in the boot manager. It's not on the hard drive.
Corrupted.
Mm. Right.
It's corrupted, yeah.
Even though it ran for 3 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, something is not well with that machine.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, I'm going back to a complete backup set from 2020 when I originally bought the laptop. So we'll build up from there.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
It's a good way to spend a weekend or two or three.
Well, this weekend's supposed to be cruddy anyway.
The storm coming, yeah.
Well, the storm's going away. No more 11 inches. Now talking 3 to 4. So
I like 3 to 4. That's much better than 11.
That's a winter day in Rochester, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, you take care. Enjoy. I'll listen to the rest of your show offline.
All right. Thanks, Al.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. I'm hoping that this afternoon we can get home before the storm gets terrible. And then I'll be just home, and I don't care.
Yep.
And tomorrow I'll be home, but I think it's supposed to be warm tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah, tomorrow it's supposed to go up to 40. Matter of fact, overnight it's supposed to go up to 40 degrees, and we're supposed to get rain.
I like
and rain. Rain until tomorrow, and then it's supposed to switch over to colder temps and maybe a dusting or so.
We were supposed to go to dinner for my wife's birthday tomorrow in Canandaigua.
Oh.
Nobody wanted to drive all the way to Canandaigua in a storm. Well, one, Canandaigua's not that far. And now there's no storm, but we've already moved to another restaurant in Fairport. Okay.
Yeah, right.
So when she went to call the restaurant to cancel the reservations, they said, "Oh, we understand, but you know, please, you know, think of us again if you're gonna."
Yeah, we've eaten
there before, just you know, not this time.
Of course. All right, we're gonna take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. And you, give us a call. You know the numbers. I don't have to repeat them again. Give us a call and we'll have a little chit-chat. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Chuck from Penfield, New York, on the line. Hiya, Chuck. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. You've probably gone over it before, but would you rehash proper way to do backups? My corporate world tells me you should never store on anything but a removable media that should be stored off-site. And if you do incremental backups, which saves space, you got to remember that some of those files are on the full backup. That might be three or four backups previous. And you know what I'm saying?
Yep. Okay. So, backups.
Yeah.
How much time have we got?
Loaded gun.
Okay. So, there are multiple types of backups. There's full backup. Okay. There's full disk backup, which means you back up the operating system as well as the data that you've created, your personal data.
Okay, now that's what I never do. I only back up data that I've created because operating system goes off to the weeds, I just reinstall it.
And that is exactly correct.
Okay.
A lot of places say you should back up the operating system, too. I say no.
Yeah, that sucks sometimes
for that very reason.
Sometimes mm-hmm. It depends if you want a fast backup or a fast restore.
Yeah. Right.
So if you want to get back up and running instantly, back up the whole drive.
Now, I do say if you have a brand new machine that you're just setting up, make a backup. Then if you ever have to start from scratch again, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a full backup. That makes sense. But most of the time, you just want to back up your data. Now, there are multiple ways to do that. There's a full backup, which means every time you do a backup, you back up all your data. That's slow, but it means when you do a restore, you only restore one image. Then there's,
which is also slow.
Which is also slow. Then there's the incremental backup, which is fast to back up because the first backup takes everything. The second backup only takes what's new. And the third backup only takes what's new since the second backup, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what that means is when you have to do a restore, you have to restore the full, then the first backup, then the second backup, then the third backup, et cetera, et cetera.
Although most backup software will do that for you automatically, so you do it once.
That's only if you want to restore everything.
Right, exactly.
If you're just looking for one file, you just have to find out.
Right, yeah.
Right.
And that's the two reasons you might need to restore. You lost everything or you lost one thing.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Right. So, yes, and
so if you have one file that's corrupted.
Well, and that leads me to the next point, which is multiple backups.
Okay.
You should have multiple backups. If you look at the asknick.com/backups, I think is where it is.
.php, yep.
.php, yeah.
Popped it to the top of the link list.
Thank you. Asknick.com/backup.php. You will see the 3-2-1 backup plan. You want three separate backups in two separate places, at least one of which is off-site. And off-site can be in the cloud. Right?
Okay, yeah, okay.
Or we have a lot of customers, we'll have two backup drives, and they'll take one to work and leave one at home.
Right.
Okay.
The problem with that is you have human interaction.
Yeah, someone has to remember to do it.
Right, and do it consistently, and not forget it in the trunk so it dies in the cold, et cetera, et cetera. But you certainly can do that. I prefer automating everything. For example, I currently only have two copies, and I know this is bad, of the Soundbites archive. One is on my hard drive and one is in the cloud. Actually, no, that's a lie. I do have three backups. So I just put it on my back. I just created a backup drive, an off system backup drive, but it's not off site because it's sitting next to the computer right now.
Okay, okay.
But off site would be much better. So those are the three ways to do things. I also have, for my documents, I also use pCloud, which you'll see on there. And that's basically a set it and forget it. You know, you set it up one time, which is pretty easy, and then you're done. Everything happens in the background.
But you should remember to check every now and then.
And I do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I do.
Now, are you saying that if you make a backup, like I do all my backups on Saturday morning, if you do that, you got to do it three times and have it on three different devices, three different memory sticks, three different whatever's.
You want it in, like I said, three copies in two separate places.
Okay.
At least one of which is off-site.
And that's the safest way.
Okay.
Think about fire, flood, theft. Your computer and the backup drive sitting next to it are both burned up.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
Yeah, okay.
Now, the other thing is, if you only back up once a week, you're vulnerable for 6 days.
Yeah, you could lose 6 days worth of work.
Yes, I realize.
So for a home user who just reads email, that may not be an issue. For a business, or even a small business at home, most of us, so Apple's Time Machine, default backup is every hour.
Right.
So you don't lose more than an hour's worth of work.
pCloud is the minute you save it, it's
up
there.
A lot of the cloud backup services are every time a file is changed, that change gets uploaded.
So it almost becomes a matter of what am I comfortable with losing? It's kind of like when you bet, how much money am I willing to lose?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, people ask us how often do you back up, and the answer is how much do you want to lose.
If you've got a business and you say, I need every day's receipts or I need every day's, then that says you back up every night. If you're at home, I change this and I change that, but if I lose it, I might whine and complain, but it's not going to...
Well, things people don't think about. Yeah, your email, that's not that big a deal. Cause a lot of times your email is still on the mail server. Google keeps all your email forever.
Yeah.
In fact, it's really hard to delete Google email.
Exactly.
But your photos.
That's the critical
the
one.
The photos that you have, kids, grandkids, whatever.
Yeah.
It's very hard to get those photos back. A lot of times if someone sent you the photos, they might be able to send them to you again.
Okay.
But as I just mentioned earlier, I've got 93,000 photos in my library going back 30 years, which is fun looking at my old cameras. Remember that 640 by 480 Mavic floppy disk camera?
Yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah, how much are you willing to lose, and what's the threat of losing it? And mechanically, you're...
And what's the pain of losing
it? Right. Yeah. Your computer's going to die. Your backup hard drive is going to die. Hopefully not at the same time. That's why you have a third drive. The chances of all three dying at the same time
are low. And how much are you willing to endure?
Right. So it used to be we'd say don't back up to the same media.
Yeah.
So you'd have one backup on floppy, one backup on CD. That got to be untenable. And then we went to tape. Now, even the biggest tapes are only 100 megs.
Right.
So that's still untenable. Hard drives are the easiest way to back up yourself.
Yeah, because CD and DVDs are just about extinct.
Yeah, and it's that CD is less than 1 meg, so it would take me a million CDs to back up my stuff.
Now, in my case, I do incrementals, so would it be wise on one media to do a full backup and then subsequent incrementals?
If you're going to do a full a backup, I would suggest you have at least one full backup.
Right.
And again, it depends on your use case. So if all you do is write a few documents during the week, maybe update some sort of spreadsheet with like your health information or something.
Stuff, so I keep track of stocks and stuff like that. But a lot of those are in the company that has my stocks anyhow. So the history of that is there.
I keep
my own records. What I would be willing to lose is, I would say, minuscule. Zero pictures. I mean, there's a bunch of pictures, but they're years back, and they just kind of stay there and live forever. But I'm not a photographer, so I don't have, like you guys have daily additional pictures that have to be added in.
Right. Well, look, as long as you've got those pictures backed up somewhere,
you're good.
Yeah, okay.
You know, two or three times,
yep.
You're good.
Okay.
But yeah, if it's all based on your use case. But if you're not a prolific creator of data, then backing up once a week, as long as you're willing to tolerate the pain of losing that week's information,
right,
is fine.
Right. Okay. Or you might even, this is really important. I should go back up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the biggest thing is to pick a good backup program that does it automatically, so you don't have to remember to do it.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Right, something that backs up automatically without your input. That's, again, I'll push pCloud because it backs up to the cloud. You tell it what directories you want to save, and you're done. So every time I put something in, for example, my documents directory, it automatically gets backed up to the cloud.
Okay, all right.
And
again, we're talking about just data files, not OS and
right.
all that other
stuff. Those you'd have to reinstall anyway.
Right, because you're not going to resurrect a DLL somewhere.
Right.
So I back up my documents folder. I back up my, my music folder. I back up my pictures folder.
Yeah, okay.
I don't care about the rest of it. I've got a temp folder.
And you've probably got one for your personal stuff and one for the soundbite stuff.
Exactly.
And what's nice about pCloud versus other cloud backup services, most of them have like a monthly fee, which is fine. You're getting value out of that. pCloud has an a lifetime payment. You pay once for the rest of their life.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Kind of like it used to be when you bought software.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right, very good.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you for the education. All right, bye.
Thanks, bye-bye.
There was a company years ago, and we loved them for their personal backup plan, and they went enterprise only. You could put a hard drive at a friend's house.
Oh, yeah.
And back up there. That was your offsite backup, and they could back up to a hard drive at your house, and that was free. You can still do that through the internet. It's tricky to set up.
Right.
So this program used to do that really easily.
Right.
So now we're seeing a lot of the network attached to storage drives, Synology and Buffalo and several of those NAS drives, will have backup services built in. And you can sync two of those drives over the internet. So if you have a work and a home or a friend that you trust,
right,
you put another drive in their house. And so that's your offsite backup. So that's the thing about storing things in the cloud. You have to trust the cloud service. But everything is encrypted before it gets sent there.
Right.
So then you have to trust that they'll stay. I've got so many pictures on so many sites that don't exist anymore. So fortunately, well, even sites like Amazon, they may decide to get out of the free storage business.
Right.
And then we'll move. That's why a lot of us moved to Amazon, is Google got out of the free storage business.
Exactly.
For Google Photos. And so you never know what's going to happen next. So having that off-site copy, especially for a disaster recovery, maybe we're the jinx, but we had three customers last year or year before had fires in their house and lost most of their data. Cause a lot of times it's not just the fire risking damaging your drive. It's all the water they used to put out the fire or the building that collapses on your computer and crushes your hard drive.
Right. You never know, and what a lot of people do is have a second machine in their home, and often it's a Raspberry Pi because they're cheap, and they throw a 2 or 4 terabyte drive on that.
I've got two of them.
Because they're cheap.
They're cheap, and so you can then set up backup to those. Now, they're still in your house, so if your house burns down, you've still got a problem, but you've got multiple backups.
Mm-hmm. That's why mine, I've got two, and they're down in the basement.
Yep.
Less chance of getting...
Less chance, but not no chance.
No, yep. Nothing's
so,
guaranteed
yeah, but,
100.
But, yeah. The, you know, you mitigate as far as you can.
Yep.
And those aren't your only backups. So I actually back up to two different Raspberry Pis, pCloud. My Bluehost has... I'm paying for unlimited hosting because of Soundbites, and so I have unlimited hosting, so I'm using that. And another hard drive somewhere else and a couple of other. I have a lot mm-hmm. of backups, and that's only because I'm paranoid. And I spent, 20 years as a systems administrator. It's professional paranoia. And as I say, you cannot be paranoid enough when it comes to your data.
Yeah. And you can get a fire safe. So a lot of people have fire safe for important documents. Computer media will melt before the paper gets lost, so you
right.
need a data-ready FireSafe. And there's companies that sell basically a hard drive inside of this fire-resistant enclosure, and they're usually rated for how many hours of fire and how many days of water submersion.
And that's where, again, I would suggest putting that in the basement.
Yep.
Because heat goes up. I learned that a long time
water
ago.
Water goes down.
Yeah, but... If it's in that fire, you know, waterproof enclosure. Plus, my father-in-law taught me because he was chief of police, and he says, you know, put your valuables in there too, because if police, you know, somebody breaks into your house, they're rummaging through the drawers upstairs and on up into the bedroom, and that they don't think to go down into the basement looking for stuff. They're not going to waste the time.
Well, they didn't until you just told them to.
They still got to know where to look. And how many people's basement are that well organized?
No, not ours.
Not mine. Guaranteed.
Not ours.
They could spend a couple hours looking in through all the stuff that I've got stored down there.
Our house was built in the 1880s-ish. Somewhere.
Mine's 1928.
And we have a dumbwaiter to the basement where the kitchen, the real kitchen, used to be.
Yep.
Because you didn't want the scullery maids mingling with the people who own the house. That room somehow, for the people who owned it before us, became the trash room. And there's still trash in there. We never even looked at. We just, mm-hmm. you know, fine, okay. But there is that dumbwaiter, and we use it for storage, but we've never gone down into the basement with
it. Well, in my house, too, I had the old laundry chute.
Oh, we got that, too.
A lot of folks wouldn't know. As a matter of fact, it looks like... In the kitchen, it's still there. You can still see the looks like the old milk box door.
Yep.
That you open it up and you can throw stuff down. And for you folks too young to remember this, laundry chutes, instead of having the laundry basket upstairs and all that, no, you had a chute that literally you open up this door, throw your dirty clothes, and it go all the way down to the basement and land in a laundry basket down there, because that's where always the laundry was done mm-hmm. and hung.
I had the maids, by the way.
Yeah.
See, now they're putting the laundry machines upstairs with the bedrooms, because that's where you take your clothes off. And that makes so much sense. Why didn't anyone think of that sooner?
Exactly.
One key thing, and because I did that. When I redid this house, I put the laundry room upstairs to save my late wife the hassle going up and downstairs. When you go to put in a laundry room like that, you put the pan in, put the braided lines.
Oh, yeah.
They're steel braided lines.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that, folks, because if a water line breaks,
yeah,
that water's going all over the place. And, you know, depending on where it's situated in the house and downstairs, a lot of stuff could get damaged, ceilings collapse, and everything else.
The one rule is water will always find the worst place to go.
Yep.
Our house has a laundry chute as well. It goes, I told you, built in the 1880s. We have maids' quarters in the attic. Haven't found the maid yet. Don't know where she's hiding.
Still hiding on you.
But there's a laundry chute that starts inside one of the risers. You push one of the risers in the back stairs, and it drops down and goes through the kitchen. And we've turned that from the kitchen to the basement into a pop can run. We finish with a soda can, you know, whatever, a can or a liter bottle, whatever. We drop it down there into a bag that's a laundry bag that's waiting at the bottom, and we haul it off and cool. get our stuff, and that's how we do that. So those aren't sitting around. Well, we clean them out first and let them dry.
Wasn't there an old story about Kodak tried to put a pool on like the third floor of one of their rec buildings and.
It was building 28.
No one accounted for the mass of the water.
Yeah.
And so they could never fill it.
Yep.
So then they put
it was the weight of the water, not the mass.
Yeah, the weight of the water. And what they did is they turned that into, do you remember, at the train station?
Yeah,
they had the big panorama. They developed the panoramas in that big tank. They section it off.
Development tank. That's lovely. Yeah.
And like the Times Square giant.
They literally had it.
When they had printed posters there, film posters. Now there's just giant screens everywhere.
Yeah,
Aquinas had a pool at one point. The urban legend is they put the drain at the wrong end. So they covered it over and made it the band room. You could hear that sound.
Vibrate all through it.
Everywhere.
I just found an article about U of R, the lost swimming pool in the Susan B. Anthony dorm. They built a 25-yard, six-lane swimming pool, and then when the gym was moved to a new building, there's pictures of it. They just threw all the outdated desk chairs in the pool.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that picture. I didn't know there was U of R.
Crazy, yeah.
Nice. That got us far off of backups, a little far afield there.
Disaster ready.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. When I was at RIT, we had a disaster recovery person. And she went, you might think to yourself, that's a little too far. She worried about nuclear explosions and everything else. That's her job.
Mm-hmm.
That was her job. Now, I grant you, individually, if we have a nuclear war, the last thing you're going to care about is where your yesterday's document is. That's not going to be your main concern. But for an institution like RIT, that still becomes a concern. And so you have to say, what happens if the data room, what happens if this machine goes down? What happens if the data room floods? What happens if there's an earthquake? What happens if there's this, if there's that? And you go all the way up to nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to.
You have to have a contingency plan.
For all of that.
Kodak Park used to have a nuclear reactor.
What?
Kodak Park used to have a nuclear reactor from 74 to, let's say, for 30 years. So what is that, 2004?
Yep.
Yeah.
Don't
want to burn coal. Maybe that's why they were building that giant smokestack when I was there that summer.
Maybe it may not have been a smokestack. May have been a cooling tower.
Yeah.
You don't have to quite go that far, but really stop and think, how much pain are you willing to go through? How much data are you willing to lose?
Especially in those photos. Mm-hmm. I mean, documents, and I've said for quite a few years, documents, can be a pain in the butt, but you can recreate those. But the photos of, say, children when they were smaller, or loved ones that, have left us, and all you have are the memories of that left, once they're lost, they're lost.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get those back. There's just no recreating that,
And then you try to send the drive to Drive Savers, and for a couple $1,000s, they might be able to get your data back.
With no guarantees.
Yeah.
Right. People, as we get on in years, one of the things we do is, some of us at least keep spreadsheets of our health or whatever, right? And we just had a caller who keeps a spreadsheet of his stocks and investments. How much of that are you willing to lose? How much of that are you willing to lose?
The time and effort that you put into it, too.
Right, right. And it's about how difficult would it be to recreate. In many cases, it would be impossible. Sure, you can pay to get historical stock data. And if you're willing to pay for that, great. Good for you. But I have a friend who has solar panels, and he keeps track. Does he want to lose those data? I don't think so. There, you know, you need that historical data to for a lot of reasons. So, yeah, if you've got data that you don't want to lose, reconsider your backup plans. Reconsider what you're willing to lose forever. That's where that comes down.
And it will happen to you. People, we hear from all the time, I've never lost any data. You've been really lucky.
That's right.
It will. Hard drives will die. Data will be lost.
Yep.
Your college roommate's son is going to drop soda on the computer on the bed.
Yep.
It's never my kid. It was his roommate. We get a lot of those.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't
soda,
care who
if you're
it was.
Lucky.
Right. All right, that music tells us we are done with the first hour of this show, but do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right, a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you call 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. We're right here. We're waiting to take your questions and make up answers, but we can't do that unless you call. But take a little bio break, get yourself a beverage, maybe a little snackaroonie, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 5 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Well, you can tell the weather is definitely getting bad because, from what we can see, the snow is going. And I look over here, and the number's up to 138.
Yeah. If you're planning on calling in, by the way, the first half hour is the best time to do it. Oh, I'm going to read the miscellaneous news because it has a little something to say about AI at the bottom. Reports from a handful of early adopters of NVIDIA's new GeForce RTX 5090 graphics card are reporting that their power cables are melting. This calls back to a similar situation from early in the RTX 4090's life cycle, where power connectors were melting and even catching fire, damaging the GPUs and power supplies. We'll see if this is a couple of flukes or something systemic. They say that the original 4090 problem was that users didn't plug them in tight enough. Of course, it's always the user's fault. We've reported in the past that the BBC is unhappy about how AI chatbots were hallucinating, lying, when summarizing news reports from their site. The study, which examined OpenAI's ChatGPT, Google Gemini, Microsoft Copilot, and Perplexity, found more than half of all AI-generated output had significant issues of some form. Despite this, Google will soon use AI to estimate the age of its users. It's testing a machine learning model in the U.S. to help determine whether someone is under 18, allowing it to provide more age-appropriate experiences across its platforms. Can't wait for some 4-year-old to be allowed to see porn or some 60-year-old told to get their parents' permission to download a song. All this leads us to a study that concludes that trusting artificial intelligence over the real thing seems to be atrophying people's critical thinking skills. New research from Carnegie Mellon and, ironically, Microsoft suggests that the more people use AI, the less critical thinking they do. And let's face it, there's already a dearth of critical thinking in this world. So what do you think of this? Tell your phone to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Alaska, what do I think of this? We've seen, you know, people tend to, what's the word I want to use? Be lazy, I guess. And often they will, you know, we've talked before about how some of the AI chat programs write amazing code. The problem is if the AI writes too much of your code, your ability to write your own code is going to atrophy. That's a simple truth. I don't care how wonderful you think you are or anything else. That's going to happen. So you want to be a little careful as to how often or to what extent and for what things you use AI. You know, having it write all your tweets for you, having it summarize documents for you, having it write code for you, all of that stuff. In the long run, probably not good for your brain. So every once in a while, do your own work. That's probably the next thing that's going to come up. People sitting in front of their computers just nodding and drooling while the computer does all the real work.
That's why your teachers always told you to show your work.
Exactly.
But I did it in my head. So I cracked my head open and put it on the paper.
Well, but at least you did it, as opposed to saying, I asked Alaska to do it.
Yep.
Right. All right, back to the phones. And by the way, for those of you who are new to this, thanks to our friend Dennis Worcester, we have learned to call the Amazon smart speaker Alaska so that we don't use its real name, which apparently actually sets it off if it's in the same room you're listening to soundbites. We don't really want. I suppose if we were selling something, we would say that.
Yeah.
You know, but we're not. So.
Alexa, remind me to listen to Soundbites on Jazz 90.1.
Every Saturday from noon to 2.
Yeah, that, nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. What's up, Walter?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Three weeks ago, there was a caller came up and mentioned about the micro computers, and he didn't mention any brand names, but you and the gentleman there were all kind of interested in saying, yeah, there's something to be thinking about versus a Raspberry Pi. So I took a look online, and sure enough, I could see a good number of them, but these are all odd names I've never heard of before.
Yeah.
Like Fung Ku and Ku Pao and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Have you any experience with any of these companies? I mean,
yes.
Go ahead, please. Can you give them recommendations?
All right. These used to be called NUCs or NUCs.
Right.
New Unit of Computing.
Or Next.
And they were, no, NUC, or Next Unit of Computing. Okay. You're right. And they were originally from Intel. So I own an Intel NUC, which I bought secondhand on eBay, by the way. It wasn't secondhand. It was still in its original case, unopened. But these NUCs are generally lower-end Intel chips, but they are generally real Intel chips.
Yes.
And you get X amount of RAM and X amount of hard drive, and X could be zero, or in my case, I got a terabyte hard drive. Right? I got 8 gig of RAM and a terabyte hard drive. So you pay for what you get, and you get what you pay for. But these things work. They are, in fact, real computers. They come with all of the ports you would need and everything else. You hook up a keyboard, mouse, and screen, and you've got a full-blown real lower end but real computer. And so using them as a server or you know, a whatever mine, I'm using mine as a Plex server, so I save all my movies to it, and I can, you know, all my DVDs, I rip them to this Plex drive, and I can watch them anytime I want, anywhere in my home without, you know, having to go get the DVD anymore. Where the hell are you going to get a DVD anymore?
Mm-hmm.
So I can do that. So you can have all kinds of, you know, servers. You can have all kinds of backup machines. You can have a second machine in another room. You can do whatever you want with them.
And
they work. And they're, sorry, go ahead.
I was saying, and Intel stopped making the NUC brand, style computer, but Asus still does. But many companies, the Lenovo you just bought, you got the tiny version, right?
No, I did not. I got the desktop.
The next step up, yeah. So a lot of companies are calling them tiny computers because apparently they didn't want to pay to use the NUC trademark.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
There are more of the well-known companies making these tiny computers now.
And even the companies that you haven't heard about, the thing I would suggest you do if you're looking at one of these,
yes,
head on over to YouTube. I guarantee you, there's 50 videos at least, talking about that particular model and whether it's good or bad. And you will find that some are very good and some are not
quite what they should be.
Right. So, but as far as those NUCs themselves go, they are completely viable as real desktop computers. And certainly as devices on your network that do other things, like, in my case, serving movies or backing up or whatever it is they do.
But just like with any computer, you got to know what you want to use it for. You're not going to use it for 3D modeling or Hollywood video editing.
Right, right. So you could, you know, depending on how many and how big your databases are, you could set one up as a database server.
Mm-hmm.
You could set one up as a storage server. You could, you know, whatever you need. You could set one up to be your router. Put pie hole on it. No, not pie hole, but things like it. And all of that stuff.
It'd be fine for web surfing and email, as long as you don't say, I want to play games.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, right, unless the game is solitaire, right?
Yeah.
But, you're not going to play any high-end games on it and like that. But for day-to-day usage, the same sort of things you would use a Chromebook for example.
Yeah.
It would be perfectly fine for those things.
Okay. Yeah, because I've been on some websites, and they do come up with these names, such as Fun Toy or some things, and they recommend them, and they are on the higher end. They cost about $500 or so. I've also looked in at the lower ends, one, just to see what it is, and they tend to run with a Celeron 4200 or Celeron 4220. And I was thinking to use this as an emergency desktop,
you know,
because of a Trumpflation, just to get it now, let it sit there. I use MX, and so I can go ahead and I can back up the entire system and load that on, and it'll run, from what I can tell, slow, but it's there.
Exactly. And, again, you're absolutely right there. Generally lower end, mine is an mine's an i5.
That's nice.
And so it runs okay.
Okay.
You know, I could absolutely use it as my desktop. Certainly not as fast as my i7, but it would work.
Yeah.
And as similarly an i3 or a Celeron or whatever, particularly again if you're not you playing games or any of that stuff, you might on the very low-end machines, get some stutter on YouTube.
Yeah, we don't do that. We don't watch videos. It's basically, like you say, doing email, watching, you know, doing web searching. Occasionally we'll be using it at YouTube just in order to see what people comment about or what their experiences are with certain things.
Right, but you don't mind it being a little stuttery or whatever?
No.
Right, so, no, I get that. And yeah, absolutely. I would take a look at the YouTube reviews of those particular models,
okay,
and you'll find that some of them are for what they are, excellent.
Okay. Dan, I want to bring up to you one quick thing.
Yeah.
About a month ago or so, I told you I had to turn to Space FM because I couldn't use Thonar to safely remove my hard drives that were off of, that were connected to an adapter. Lo and behold, they came up on my MX. They had a whole new Thonar, and so for the past 3 weeks, I've not had a problem. I said, okay, I wonder what this is going to do, and Thonar now allows me to use those adapters and safely remove.
Excellent.
So I took a look just to see what their changes might have happened. Didn't see anything that was specific to that instance, but so far so good. So I can leave Spaceman on my desk, but it's there as a backup. Thank you.
Excellent. Well done. Thank you.
Okay.
Thonar, by the way, is a is the
file manager.
File manager, thank you, for one of the versions of Linux. And it is, you know, everyone has their own file manager. So Apple calls it
Finder.
Finder.
Yeah. Where you find your files.
Where you find your files.
We always joke about Microsoft's generic program names. Word. That's where you do your words.
Right.
Yeah.
But... And you guys have Finder, so
yeah,
shut up.
We find our stuff, yep.
Right. So, yeah, I would, you know, that's what Thonar is. It's the file manager. So when you open a window, that's open a window onto your hard drive.
So Thonar is the old Saxon name of Thor.
Yes.
So I wondered, your icon is Mjolnir.
Yep, Mjolnir, yeah, whatever it is. When you open up a window on your hard drive and see your folders, that's Thonar. When you open one of those folders, that's Thonar. When you do a drag and drop sort of thing, that's all Thonar. So, all right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Sharon from Churchville, New York. Hi, Sharon, what's up?
Hi there. I had a Bluetooth mouse issue. I have a fairly new computer, which I bought in December, an HP Envy laptop, and the mouse is less than a year old. It's a Logitech M510, and the mouse cursor is very slow to respond in emails and like in Word and Excel. When you go into those documents, the arrow turns to a cursor, and to get it to move to the Word, I have to move the mouse all over the place to try to get it on the Word or whatever I'm trying to do. And I have looked it up online. I have Windows 11, and they talked about doing the mouse adjustments. I called Logitech. I bought it from Best Buy, so I called them, and no one has been able to help me fix this problem. I did try the mouse, the mouse touchpad, which I don't like to use, but I tried that, and it does the same thing with the touchpad. So I'm wondering, is this an issue with Windows 11, or is there something wrong with the mouse?
Have you played with the pointer speed slider?
Yes.
In the mouse set, okay.
What I was going to say, when you installed this new Logitech mouse, did you also install the software?
Maybe update the Logitech driver.
Yeah, I mean, if you just plugged it in and, you know, you're going, it's using a generic mouse, or it might use whatever old driver that it had in there for that particular mouse under Logitech, whereas if you go to the Logitech site and look for the latest software, download that and install that.
Well, the fact that the internal trackpad does the same thing, too, is tricky. If you disconnect the Bluetooth mouse, does the internal trackpad work normally?
No, I haven't done it yet. And I can't answer a question about downloading the drivers because my husband did it, and I don't know if he did that or not. So I guess maybe that's a possibility.
Okay, so check with him about how he installed it.
Especially since it's Windows 11.
And in any case, whether he did or not, go look for the new thing. There might be a new driver. They're updating them all the time.
Especially for Windows 11, you know, more and more folks now being forced to go to Windows 11. You know, there's a big push on a lot of companies to now get Windows 11 drivers out there specifically for that versus, yeah, we're kind of compatible with Windows 10 and 11. Yeah, that's not cutting it anymore.
Right.
Okay. So what do I do? Just go online and look for Logitech driver?
You go to Logitech.com and /downloads.
And it will ask you for exactly what model your mouse is. So you got to look on. Usually look on the bottom of it to find the model number. So Logitech makes a million.
But don't look into this laser.
Yeah, yeah. With remaining eye, Logitech makes a million mice, and so you got to get the driver for exactly your model.
Okay, I do have a Logitech icon on my computer, but I don't know what that means.
It may be that you've got a version of the driver, but. Many of the mice come with a little CD where they can install the driver, but generally that driver is older.
Yeah, and it's not so much anymore. They just rely for you to go online.
More and more computers don't come with a CD drive anymore anyway.
Okay. So, all right, I'll go ahead and try that. If that doesn't work, then what would you suggest?
Well, if you disconnect the mouse, turn the mouse off completely, and it still has a problem.
And unplug the USB dongle.
Well, it was, okay. Yeah, is it RF or Bluetooth?
Yeah.
So, if it's an RF mouse, unplug the dongle.
Yeah.
And if the built-in trackpad still doesn't work, then the problem is in the computer, not the mouse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see.
So that becomes different troubleshooting than whatever brand name the computer is. See if there's a driver update for that.
I unplugged it, and it's the same thing. It doesn't seem to be working right.
Right. So the first thing to do is to go to the HP website and see if there are new trackpad drivers for it.
Okay.
And install those. It may well be that when the Logitech mouse was installed, your husband just said install all the drivers, and it installed a trackpad driver of its own.
And the other key question, did this machine originally have Windows 10 on it?
No.
It came with Windows 11?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so what...
in December.
Okay, so the first thing to do is to go to the HP website and get the latest trackpad drivers.
Okay.
Then go to the Logitech site and get the latest mouse drivers. Make sure you get the mouse drivers only for the mouse and only for the model of mouse you have.
Okay. Okay.
And it may help to uninstall any Logitech drivers that are already there first.
Right. Mm-hmm. Turn off the mouse. Uninstall those drivers.
Okay, so uninstall. Okay, very good. I will try those three things, and hopefully it'll work.
All right, good luck, Sharon.
Let's go.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's, again, this is the problem, of course, with every operating system. Even with Macs, because in terms of peripherals, you can buy third-party peripherals, which may need a different driver.
Right.
And so often drivers will interfere with each other. One driver will overwrite something that another driver needs. It's a real problem in the Windows and Mac worlds. Linux has been trying to mitigate this with snaps and flat packs where you download and app images. Where you download a single file that includes everything that device needs, but it doesn't interfere with any other device. It's essentially running in a little virtual machine of its own. And that is helpful and that is useful. It is not a 100% solution, but more and more companies are turning to snaps and flatpaks.
And both Apple and Microsoft have tried doing auto-install drivers.
Right.
So you plug a device in, and a message pops up and says, "Oh, I see mouse. Would you like to install the driver?" It usually gets the right one.
Yeah, but usually, exactly. So that is an issue. The driver issue is one that still plagues every device, and all you can do is pray to the driver gods and go for it. You know, the beauty of devices like HP are that they have. You can go to their websites, type in your serial number or, you know, whichever number you have.
Service tag.
Service tag is the other one. And it will tell you everything that came with that machine and give you all the latest drivers for that machine. Now, in Sharon's case, that doesn't work for the Logitech mouse because that's an add-on. But it does work for the trackpad. So she can go, or her husband can go to that website, type in the service tag or the serial number, and you know, one of the things that will be listed is the laptop trackpad driver, and they can download that and install it directly, and it will be the latest one. You'll actually get choices in many cases of multiple versions. Pick the latest one. And install that, and that should solve that problem. And then similarly go to the Logitech site and tell that, and you know, put in the type of mouse you have. Again, that may be a product number or whatever on the bottom of the mouse, and then download the latest driver for that and install just that driver, nothing else.
To make it really simple, never get anything extra for your computer.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you do, get something fairly generic.
Yeah, or from the same company that made the computer.
Right. You know, I just got, like I said, I just got a new Lenovo computer. I'm planning to hook up my Microsoft keyboard and my Dell mouse and my Vizio screen. No, my Spectre screen. And those are all from multiple different companies, mm-hmm. but all of them are essentially generic.
Yeah.
And screens these days... the graphics card will query the screen and ask it what dimensions it has, what its resolution is, and what it wants to see, and it will give it that. I love that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave. We will be back, won't we? We have a thing coming, but we'll be back.
Longer break.
In just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, a special guest, and you. Back in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I should probably put my glasses on so I can read that it's 34 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. And I'm not sure where we're going at this point.
Well, we're going to go to our special guest.
All right, let's do that. Excellent. You're going to love this. Dan Lyons is going to give us a little more information to keep us safe.
Hi there. I'm Nick Francesco from Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1. We are talking to Dan Lyon, the Fraud and Scams Program Manager for Upstate Elder Abuse Center at Lifespan of Greater Rochester, Inc. Dan, thanks so much for joining us and sharing your expertise with us.
Nick, an absolute pleasure to have me and Lifespan on your show here at Jazz 90.1. Can't wait to get into the subject matter today.
We very much appreciate it, so let's jump right in. Older gentlemen, like myself, with distinguished beards, get a lot of friend requests from young ladies I do not know. Are any of them legitimate?
Nick, of course, I'd like to tell you they're all legitimate, and there's a lot of those lovely ladies looking for you out there. But let me bring you back down to earth. Probably not one of them are legitimate. I'm sorry, Nick, but you're a nice guy, and you're... Yeah, you're not bad looking, but guess what? Let's talk about romance scams.
Yes. You've shattered my dreams, by the way, so go ahead. I'm going to sit here and cry.
Romance scams are certainly leading the pack for the large sums of money that are pilfered out of the American public on a daily basis, where a man or a woman has met someone online. And that online meeting, chance, may have taken place on a social media website. That online encounter may have taken place on a simple gaming platform. Several of my clients I've dealt with here in the past were chatted up on Words with Friends, a crossword puzzle game, where they met someone, or a different game website where there's a chat box. And what these scammers are going to do is they're going to begin talking with someone, Nick, like yourself, early on, and just simply, you know, kind of lay the foundation and say, hey, you know, my name is Dan. What's your name? I see you like playing Words with Friends. And, of course, it's just a simple tactic to get people to open up. Next thing we know, that how often do you like playing this game, or how often are you on this platform? And next thing they know, they're learning you're on here every day or every other day. And guess what? So are they. They're looking for you, and every time you're online with this platform, they're reaching out to you and learning more information about you every single time. And they take copious notes about you and what you're disclosing to them. I would tell people, when you're online, you got to be wary of giving out personal information. If you would not give a person passing you by at the mall or on a sidewalk that you had never met, then why are you giving it out online? It's just as dangerous. And certainly, these people are going to not just want your name. They'll eventually get to your age. And they may not outwardly ask your age, but Nick, they're going to lead with questions that certainly figure out based upon the type of music genre you like, you know, movies you like. I'm figuring out how old you are.
Yep.
Eventually, they may in fact get the last two digits of your year. You may not give them your whole date of birth, but they figured out you were born in the 60s. Oh, it puts you around 50, 60 years old. For them, target material.
Yep. I for a while, it was kind of fun to string some of these people along, but it got boring because it's always exactly the same. It is exactly the same.
And Nick, I'm glad you said string someone along, and it was fun at first. As I would always recommend to people, especially an older adult whom is not necessarily on a computer regularly, it doesn't use a computer anymore, you know, because they're in a work setting, so they're less familiar with the ins and outs of a computer and how to use it. Because playing along with the scammers is a dangerous game. These guys know how to play better than you do. Like I said before, they're professionals at their craft. And what they're looking for is PI, personal information. And they'll start figuring out and connecting the dots in order to figure out who you are. There's a lot of information available to them on the public highway. If I can figure out that you live in Rochester, New York, I can figure out maybe your last name, or maybe you put your first initial and your last name on the website. I can certainly go to Facebook and perhaps find you now. And once I start connecting those dots, can you say identity theft? Soon the conversation, after months of conversing back and forth, you're being groomed. This will take time. They're grooming you for months, 6 months, 7 months. They're willing to spend the time conversing with you if you're willing to talk with them. Now, a lot of people say, I'm lonely, Nick. It's nice talking with someone. It is until we start getting an emotional attachment. And once the emotional attachment becomes hooked, they've got some hooks in you where they say something like, you're looking to maybe meet this person, maybe have a cup of coffee with them. And they'll say things, Nick, I'd love to come see you, but right now I just can't afford it. They didn't outwardly ask for money, but they hinted that if they had some, perhaps they'd come see you and visit you.
So my response is supposed to be, how much would a ticket cost? Let me send you that money.
And they're going to say, well, right now, because of where I'm living, I'm here in Algeria, the plane ticket is $550 one way. And, Nick, I need to get back home, so can you send me the full amount for a round-trip ticket? And, of course, Nick, let's go right back to our earlier segment in regards to payment methods. They're going to ask for the payment on that plane ticket to be via cash, Venmo, you know, a gift card purchase, a wire transfer, or a cryptocurrency exchange. And guess what they've got? Your money. And, of course, a promise, a false promise that they're going to come visit you. And they never are coming. I hate to, Nick, I hate to break that to you.
Dang it.
They're never coming to see you.
Well, thank God I was sitting down when you said that.
Have an excuse, Nick, on why they can't come see you. Always an emergency, some type of, tragic circumstance on why they can't come see you right now.
Right. One of the things that I did was, with a couple of them, I said, how do I know you are who you say you are? Send me a picture. So, of course, they send a picture. If you, and in Google, you can do a reverse image search. You can throw that picture in and say, find this picture on the web. It is always, always somebody else. Always.
And of course, a lot of, I always like to warn people, especially the older adults. I'm dealing with a client right now, they're one age, and the person whom is reaching out to them is 22 years younger. And of course, good looking. Like you, Nick. Good looking.
Yeah, clearly.
And, you got to be hesitant on when the person is A, overseas, B, 20 plus years your junior, and of course, in need of money to come see you, are all red flags of a romance scam.
Yep. And as irresistible as I clearly am, it is quite likely that all of the young ladies who make contact with me are in fact scammers.
And none of them make no bones about it. Not only are they scammers, they're professionals at romance scams, and none of them are sitting here stateside. They're always sitting overseas.
Right. And a lot of that has to do, look, people are lonely. People, particularly older people, kids are out of the house, spouse is gone, whatever it all is, and they spend a lot of their time alone. They spend a lot of their time on their computer. One of the things we talk about all the time is that people feel safe on their computer because they're there every day. They're in the comfort of their own home. They're in the privacy of their own home. So how can anything bad happen on my computer?
And that's the trap, Nick. And I always tell people, especially amount of presentations, if you were to ask me what are the two items I see in most of my victims that are taken advantage of and defrauded of money via scams, is certainly isolation, number one, and loneliness, number two. So how do we break those two things? Like you said, like my grandmother, she was widowed. My grandfather died in 82. So how does she break loneliness? She got involved in her community. She started volunteering. She started going to senior centers. She started interacting more with the neighbors. She took classes at the local college. At 70-something years old, my grandmother went back to college. But took something she was interested in. Just happened to be ceramics classes.
So, good for her.
I always tell people, get out of the house and associate with people. Proven fact, Nick, proven that a man or a woman whom is interacting with others is much less likely to be taken advantage of and defrauded by a scammer when they're interacting and moving out into the community with other people.
And, of course, you mean interacting face-to-face as opposed
absolutely.
To through a chat room or whatever it is.
Get away from the computer.
Yes.
That's not saying it's a bad thing, but get out into the community, certainly put the computer down and, you know, come back to it at night maybe and spend a little time on there. But certainly, like you said, Nick, breaking bread with someone, having a cup of coffee with someone, conversing with real people at the senior center certainly is the remedy and curing some of our loneliness and isolation for some of our older adults. And getting that interaction is vital for being scam-free.
Right. That makes a great deal of sense. We've got a couple of minutes left. So I don't know if we want to start talking about shipments, because I get a lot of notices about shipments. Delayed, wrong address, damaged. How to tell the legitimate ones?
All right, this is easy. We can do this in the couple of minutes we got, Nick. When it comes to parcel package scams or shipment scams, let it be known that you, whether it be UPS, DHL, United States Postal Service, FedEx, not one parcel package company in the United States will ever in 1 million years send you a message or call you asking for personal information regarding a package that's undeliverable. It's not going to happen. You know that's a scam every time, all the time, 100% of the time.
I just got one the other day.
Delete and trash.
Yeah, I got one the other day that said we could not deliver your package because the information was damaged. We don't know who to deliver it to. Then how did you get my email address?
Exactly. So always delete these and just trash can them and report them as junk.
Of course, the insidious part is they happen mostly at Christmas. Right.
Yes.
So, you know, when everybody's getting stuff delivered every day.
Too many people, Nick, are quick to click when it comes to they've got their cell phone, they got a quick message, and we're all too busy with our lives and reading the message carefully. And when we're clicking quickly and not reading carefully, we can get caught up in a simple scam that we simply could have been avoided by deleting, because no parcel package company is ever asking for that info.
And that's now, the important part. Nobody's ever going to legitimately ask. Ever.
Correct. Ever. Now, we are able to track our packages, but that's always going to be through the proprietor. And they were going to send you a tracking number. Always through a proprietor, whomever you're doing the business with.
Right.
That's the only tracking info you're getting.
And that's if you get it right away, you know, they'll tell you it's shipped. Here's your tracking number. You're good. All right. Dan, this was wonderful. Thanks to you and to Lifespan. Great information. I'm Nick Francesco for Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. And a special thanks to Dan Lyon and the folks at Lifespan for this series. It's been really helpful and really great that they've been willing to take their time to help us with this. But we're back for the next 10 minutes, so if you want to give us a call, it's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. You know, the scams are getting worse. They're just getting worse, and they're getting better.
Oh, yep.
They're getting so much better.
That's why I like following that one guy who is a scam buster,
yeah.
Him and his company, and he's exploited so many scam centers that he's gotten the Indian police over in India to go and bust these people. And he had one where they showed the busting of it. Because, yeah, they're trying to come up all kind of creative ways to scam people out of money.
Every day I get, you know, you've paid for this. If it's an error,
call
such and so. The first thing I do is I go to my bank. Hmm. I look at my bank's website and I look at my balance and my history. And if the money hasn't been taken out, then no, I didn't pay for that. So it's a scam.
Yeah.
Although my bank is real good. Like I said, we bought my wife a car this week, and I don't think it was 40 seconds after we paid for the car that I got a notice saying X amount of dollars were taken out of your checking account. Thank you very much.
Mine pops right up on my phone, even for the slight, even if I hit a vending machine, you know, and get a bag of chips or something out of it. All of a sudden, there's a notice up on my phone. You just paid $1.15 for this bag of chips.
Mine's a little more than that. You have to spend a little more than that.
Well, you can set a threshold.
Yeah, to get
it. Yeah, this just warns me on anything.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with.
Yep.
I don't.
Yep. I've set mine a little higher, but yeah. And what's great about that, you know, is my bank really cares for me, takes care of me.
Yep.
You know, too many people, and my daughter works in a different bank. And she her job has changed. She's not a teller anymore. But she used to talk to people all the time. People our age or older would come in and say, oh, I need $800, $500, $1,500, $5,000 to send to such and so. Okay, let's talk about this.
Yeah. My grandson is stuck at Heathrow, and his passport got stolen, so he needs money for a ticket.
Have you called your grandson?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No, I trust him.
Because he's stuck at Heathrow. I can't call him. Yeah.
Let's call him together.
Yep. So they're starting to train store clerks.
Yep.
If people are buying too many gift cards. A lot of
the signs.
Gift card kiosks are now popping up. Gift cards are for gifts. If someone wants payment in a gift card, they're probably scamming you. The lawnmower boy.
The lawnmower boy, maybe.
He'll take an Amazon gift card.
Any large, right. Any larger company will not, you can't pay Microsoft with gift cards. You can't pay Google.
Especially Apple gift cards.
Right. And you certainly can't pay the IRS with gift cards.
Yep.
This is a thing you need to know. The IRS will not accept gift cards as payment for your taxes. Let me repeat that. The IRS will not accept gift cards as payment for your taxes. If someone calls you or texts you or emails you and tells you you owe them money and you should pay by gift cards, throw that away.
Cider just Apple Cider Mac Users Group. We just had a big presentation on AARP's TaxAid software, and you can get free tax returns done through TaxAid. I'm going to post a link to the video. One of the big things that we talked about is some people will, if you owe on your taxes, they'll put it on your credit card. Don't do that. Credit card interest rates are ridiculous.
Yeah.
IRS has their own payment programs that usually are like 3 or 4%, you know, typical loan interest rates.
Right. Much lower than
1 or 2% usually.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Yes. I also receive these emails, one from iCloud saying that my subscription or whatever, my account is overdue, and I don't even use Apple. But my question is, has anyone noticed that the Yahoo Mail site has changed?
Yeah, every now and then they do an update to their website, you know, trying to add new features, and it looks different, and you can't find the things you used to do. Sometimes there's a button that says go back to old Yahoo, usually over on the right, but not always.
Yeah, and I don't see one this time.
They completely changed it.
Right.
Yeah. Now, on this iCloud and Paramount, I get these notices in the email saying that it's ready to expire to pay right away. Are those fraudulent?
Yes, especially if you don't have an iCloud account.
Right, exactly.
All right. Yeah, they send them out every day or every other day to me.
Yeah, the idea is they're hoping they'll wear you down.
And they send it to a million people, and if they can catch one or two, they've made a lot of money.
Okay, thank you for the advice. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yes. You have to understand that they live on your fear. If they can make you afraid enough to do a thing, then they win. And that thing is usually give them money. So they will make it urgent. They will make it desperate. They will make it super important. Do this now or else. And the reality is that it's all fake.
Yep. Threats.
There's threats. Yeah.
The more dire the message, the more likely it is to be fake.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. If you owe money to a company, their first half dozen attempts to get that money, the first two or three attempts anyway, will be polite and fairly quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. But if your first attempt, if their first attempt is screaming at you in some way, it's a fake. And again, stop and think. If you don't use that service, you don't owe them money. If they tell you they've taken money erroneously and want you to text them immediately, take a look at your bank account. Get online and see if, in fact, money came out of your account. If it didn't, ignore the message.
We have several customers that have gotten scammed by that, and it turns out they took money out of savings to deposit it in checking and say, we meant to charge you $50. We mistakenly charged you $5,000.
Right.
Go to the bank and get $4,000 and give it to us. You can keep the rest of it yourself.
Right.
Not noticing it came out of their other account.
Right, right, right. So be very careful what you see. Do your detective work. And don't be afraid to talk to someone at your bank about this. Don't just blindly go in and get the money. Talk to somebody. Tell them what's going on. And because they're trained to deal with this, and you are not. There's no shame in asking a person who's trained in something you're not trained in to help you deal with it. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Lyon. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. But you know what? If your question didn't get through this week, we'll be back next week. So don't worry. And of course, if you miss some of the show, you can check out the archives. They are available forever. And we'll be back in just isn't that crashing your machine now? We'll be back in just next week with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just 166 hours.